Your previous book, Fun Home, was about your father, who died years earlier. This one is about your mother, who's very much alive. Was it harder to write because of that?
Yes, absolutely. It's much easier to write a memoir about someone who's not going to read the memoir.
And,
my mother, I was showing her drafts of this and preparing for her to have this book come out all along, and that was difficult.
Well, yes, because you were very revealing about your mother's flaws, among other things. I mean, she can come across as rather self-absorbed and oblivious to your needs.
Well, I feel kind of bad about that. I mean, yes, you're right. That is part of what I'm writing about. But I'm also writing about the tremendous gift I feel my mother gave me. And part of the gift for me of learning to be an artist is, I guess, there is a certain amount of self-absorption that a person has to have. So it's an ambivalent feeling. I'm criticizing her, but I'm also writing a love letter to her. It's a thank you.
As you were sending her these sections of the book, as you were putting it together, did she see it partly as a love letter, do you think?
I don't think so, no. And she doesn't really talk to me much about the book, the content of the book. She has, her only real response to it is one that I include in the text of the book itself, and I have a conversation with her near the end after I've shown her most of it, and she says, "Well, it coheres," and that's that's about all I got, and I'm happy. I'm happy with that.
Well, and she's a former English teacher, right? So she, I guess, is speaking not just as your mother, but as someone who knows something about literature.
Well, my mother knows a lot about literature. That's the other tricky thing. I feel like she was always the writer in the family, and I was sort of afraid to encroach on her turf. Sometimes I think I became a cartoonist. Is a way of being sort of a crypto writer, like a way to be a writer that my mother wouldn't notice or feel threatened by.
So she's never totally warmed up to you being a cartoonist?
Well, no, I think she's kind of, she likes cartooning, but I'm just trying to say it's not her turf. Like, I think I was trying to avoid becoming a writer because that would have threatened her in some way.
Right. Now, the other thing that you also say about your mother is that she's had trouble accepting you being a lesbian and the fact that you write and draw scenes about your own sex life. Has that been difficult to share with your mother?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a more complicated story than that, really. I wrote a memoir about my father that came out 6 years ago called Fun Home, and that was about my father's closeted life as a bisexual man, which I did not learn about until I came out to my family when I was in college. So my homosexuality was very complicated by that story for my mother. It wasn't, just a simple matter of her disapproving it. It was it just brought up a lot of old, difficult stuff for her. And I would say that, yes, she had a hard time in the beginning, but, has warmed up quite a bit and is now quite accepting.
Mm-hmm. So how would you describe your relationship with your mother?
There was a pre-publication book review that mentioned my substantive yet essentially distant relationship with my mother. And I like that. I think that expresses it very nicely. And what's really funny is that when I showed that review to my mother, she loved it. Like, she didn't have any problem with the idea that we had a substantive yet essentially distant relationship.
So that works for both of you, sort of being substantive but distant.
I guess so, yes. Yeah, it does.
Now, it strikes me that this book is not just about your relationship with your mother. It's about the formation of personality, of the self, and how that self relates to other people. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. It's been very hard for me to boil down the book into one sentence, but it is about the self. It's about subjectivity and my own problematic relationship to myself. I feel like I'm fine when I'm alone. Myself is like intact as long as I'm isolated. But as soon as I'm in relation with another person, things get complicated. And this book was a way for me to start sorting that out.
More so than other people, do you think, in terms of just having complications relating to other people?
I don't think so necessarily. I think we all struggle with this. I think we're all dealing with the fact that we're the center of our own universes, and that's hard when you bump up against someone else's universe. Like, how do you relate? And I think often we relate in these difficult ways. Like, one person has to be more dominant. One person has to submit. And it's really hard to engage mutually with other people, to have real intersubjectivity with other people. And that's what I'm struggling to explore.
And one of the things that you do in this book, which is partly what makes it so fascinating, is you have these extended discussions of your own therapy sessions, of seminal psychoanalysts, especially the British analyst Donald Winnicott. Why are you so interested in him?
I started learning about Donald Winnicott when I read a book called The Drama of the Gifted Child by Alice Miller, when I first started doing therapy in my 20s. And she was talking about this person named Winnicott, and the ideas just sounded really entrancing. He was talking about this idea about a true self that we all have, and that often it's something that has to be hidden. We can't really always access our true self. We develop false selves to cope. Some people more than others. And I feel like I very much have struggled with a false self that I've been trying to overcome over the course of my life.
And why do you think that you developed a false self?
Well, it's hard talking about it because I inevitably oversimplify it. And I feel like cartoonists are bad on the radio because we're visual thinkers. And part of why I tell stories visually is because it's the only way I can really connect my ideas properly. But I'll try to tell you without making this too oversimplified. Miller, I guess, got a lot of her ideas from Winnicott. So Winnicott talks about he talks about something called the ordinary devoted mother. Like, most mothers have this amazing ability to just do it right. They know how to interact with an infant in a way that enables the infant to eventually not need the mother. That's like what mothers have to do. It's this difficult task because you're both caring for the baby and preparing the baby to not need you to take care of it. And all kinds of things can go wrong in those early moments. I sound like I know. I don't have a kid. I have no idea. I'm just
but you've had a mother. I mean, you have personal experience, as we all have.
But if, you know, if something interrupts that, there's many ways that things can go wrong. And even, like, if the mother is distracted or depressed or is sometimes present, sometimes not, and a baby is a person who has a particular gift for noticing other people's needs. A kid who's very sensitive might start performing in a certain way for the parent's benefit. And I think I did that. I think, you know, and it comes at a cost to the child. Yes, you make your parent happy and you kind of, you often do well in the external world, but there's a part of your self that becomes lost to you.
So what role do you think you played for your parents' benefit?
Well, I was very sensitive. And both of my parents encouraged me to keep a diary as a child, which is interesting. I started writing a diary when I was about 10 and have pretty much done that ever since. And at one point in this memoir that I've just written, I I'm talking about my childhood diary with my therapist, and she says, you know, I think your parents were asking you to, like, hold a lot of the family's emotions. Like, they turned this job of diary keeping over to you as a way of making you the repository for these unspoken, you know, dramas and feelings that were going on in the house. And I think that was, to a certain extent, true. But on the other hand, I feel like it was keeping a diary that was my way out, was my salvation, like learning to write, learning to keep track of the events of my life in a way that made sense to me was salvational.
Well, wasn't there also a period when you were quite young when you were unable to write in your diary because of an obsessive compulsive disorder, and your mother actually took over writing your diary?
Yeah, this is like sort of the primal scene of this book. I had obsessive compulsive disorder as a kid, and I would write in my journal, but it took me forever because I was blotting things out and making all these crazy little symbols. And my mother noticed that it was taking me longer and longer to make my nightly diary entry, so she offered to take dictation from me. And it was really an amazing gift. For 6 weeks, she sat on the edge of my bed and wrote in my diary for me. And I still have that diary. It's so funny to see it go from these childish, crazy, blotted out pages to her tidy adult handwriting, but in my voice. And that was very pivotal for me. I feel like, you know, all the sorts of feelings that a more normal, for lack of a better word, family would express through touch or affection or talking got funneled for me through that writing exchange with my mother. And so now I'm doomed forever to write memoirs about my life and my family.
Well, it also sounds like your mother groomed you to be an artist. I mean, maybe she didn't do certain other things for you, but she gave you the gift of self-expression.
Yeah, very much.
What's it like for you to go back and read the diary that you kept as a kid? It must be kind of strange, I would think.
Well, it's a pretty boring diary. You know, children don't really have a lot to say. In some ways, the diary is more interesting for what I'm not saying. You know, there was a lot of stuff that I now know was happening in my family and in the world. And, you know, I'm writing about the Hardy Boys book that I'm reading. So in a way, it's not really illuminating. But I know that I can count absolutely on the truth of that diary, especially the early childhood entries, because children don't lie. As I got older, you know, into high school and stuff, I would exaggerate or say things that I thought I should be feeling, and it all got a lot more murky and complicated. But I love my, like, 10 and 11-year-old entries because I can feel that they're true. I can trust them.
Hmm. I have to say, this is a really unusual book because you mix all this different stuff up together. I mean, scenes from your life, from your childhood, and then you have these long, extended sections on the history of psychoanalysis. You quote passage from seminal psychoanalytic books. You recount conversations with your own therapist, sometimes about the difficulties you have writing this book. It has a very meta quality
yeah.
to it.
To
some degree, it's a book about the making of a book.
It is. And, you know, when I first started writing the book, I was talking to my agent about it. And I said, well, you know, it's kind of a memoir about writing memoir. And she said, Allison, you cannot write a memoir about writing memoir. No one wants to read that. So I tried not to do that for a long time. But inevitably, it sort of came back around to that. And I realized that in many ways, this book about my mother began when I was talking to my mother about writing the book about my father. So it's a memoir about writing the memoir about my father, but it's also tracking its own progress as I write this new memoir. It's very confusing. And I think if it works at all, which I'm not sure about, it's because it's in comics format and it makes that kind of recursivity and just there's a lot of chronological jumping around, but doing that in comics where you can show things rather than describe them, I think it just makes it more legible. You can sort of get away with doing that, with doing a couple things at once in a way that you can't with prose.
So how do you think about putting together the words with the images that you're drawing? I mean, what's the relationship between the two?
That's the big question, and it's hard to convey. In fact, I'm teaching a class right now in comics, and I don't know how to explain to anyone how to do this. It seems like people either have a knack for it or they don't. But I write in a drawing program called Adobe Illustrator. So I'm sitting at my computer, I'm typing on a keyboard, but I'm not writing like a one-dimensional line of text as I would be in a word processing program. I'm composing on this two-dimensional page. I'm drawing panel outlines. I'm creating text boxes and dialogue balloons. And I'm not drawing in a conventional sense with a pencil, although sometimes at this stage I'll do sketches and scan them into the computer and place them in my Illustrator document. But I think of this mapping out of the page as a kind of drawing. I'm envisioning what the images will be in each panel.
So as you're writing the story, you have in your mind how you're going to illustrate it.
Yes. Yeah, it kind of comes simultaneously. And then sometimes I'll get something written out, you know, I'll get a page laid out in Illustrator, and I will make a different decision when I finally get to the drawing board. But I generally have a rough idea of what the images are going to be, even though I haven't created them yet.
Now, do you see your images as being where the emotion is mostly expressed?
That's a really good question. No one's ever asked me that. I think that's probably true. You know, I do a lot with facial expressions and gestures and body language. I draw in a rather realistic style. It's not it's not really a very cartoony style. And I actually pose for my own drawings.
You pose in front of a camera, right? You take pictures of yourself?
Yes. I this is not unusual. A lot of cartoonists do this, but I do it, I think, a little excessively. I pose for all the characters, all the figures in my drawings, just because it's a really quick, easy way to have an accurate visual reference. But it's sort of funny because I'm also embodying these characters. Like, I'm posing as my mother, I'm posing as my therapist, I'm posing as myself a lot, which is a very strange activity.
How many pictures do you take?
Oh my God, I took about almost 4,000 for this book.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're constantly sort of jumping up and down, taking photos to try to get the right angle?
Yeah, exactly. Putting costumes on sometimes, grabbing props. It's interesting. If you look at my iPhoto folder, it's like my real life is all interspersed with these strange fictional or, you know, these moments of me posing for the book.
Well,
like there'll be a picture of, you know, doing something with some friends, and then there I am pretending to be my therapist.
Well, we were talking about the meta quality of this book. It's sort of like you're acting out the story quite literally in costume.
Yeah. You know, I've spent so much of my life now writing memoirs. I don't know what my next memoir will be about. It would have to be a memoir about writing a memoir about writing a memoir.
Right. You've done your father. Now you've done your mother. Where do you go next? And it's worth pointing out, your pictures are incredibly detailed. I mean, you have sort of layers and layers in them. Sometimes you're quoting texts, and then you put your text on top of it, and then there are, you know, elaborate images. How long does it take you to create one panel?
Cartooning is an insanely labor-intensive art form. I just heard Chris Ware speak, the great cartoonist Chris Ware, and he came up with he figured out a ratio. It's like for every, it's 4,000 to 1, the amount of time it takes for a cartoonist to create something and the time it takes for someone to read it.
However he came up with that ratio, we'll just leave that to the imagination. But
yeah, but it takes a long time to make comics.
And how long did it take you to do this book then?
About 6 years. And a lot of that was struggling with the writing. Actually, when I finally got everything set and started doing the drawing came pretty quickly, and I did that maybe in a little over 1 year. That was a great relief to finally be drawing.
As you were telling the story, coming back to your mother, did the creation of the book cause you to rethink your relationship with your mother in any particular way?
I feel like it gave me a lot more insight into her life. I feel like my mother's generation had a really raw deal. You know, my mother came of age in the 50s. She was married and had two kids before the women's liberation movement, and didn't really have a chance to pursue the stuff she was really gifted at. She wanted to be an actress. She did that a little bit, but felt like she had to get a teaching degree, and she became a high school teacher and, you know, raised a family. But she found great, you know, wonderful outlets for her creativity. She acted in local summer stock theater. She eventually, after retiring, wrote for her local newspaper. She expressed herself, and she did creative work, but never as a full-time job. And I think she could have been a wonderful, college professor. I think she would have loved to have gotten a PhD and taught poetry, but that just was something that didn't work out, you know, because of when she was born.
So as you were digging into the details of her life, did you talk with her about this? I mean, was part of this project to get her to tell you her story?
No, that would have been great, but she is very reluctant to give me information, as you might imagine, because she does not want to be written about. This was, I did this not expressly against her will. It's like I didn't ask for her permission. She didn't give me permission. I just told her I was going to do this, and I know that she's a private person and doesn't like this information being revealed. I think it's a very interesting ethical question, like how much of our parents' stories belong to us, belong to the children to legitimately tell as part of their story. And that's something I'm always struggling with. I feel like I hope I have handled that ethical boundary okay.
Do you figure you've figured out that line, sort of what is ethically okay to do?
Well, I guess I feel like it's okay for me to talk about things that are perhaps technically part of her story if I feel like they have had an impact on my story. And I feel like that's what I've done in this book. I'm looking for the answers to questions I have about myself, and I'm finding some of those answers in the story of my mother's life.
Now, you said that your mother's critical assessment of your book is it coheres. Did she say anything more than that, or was that it?
No, that really was pretty much it. It's funny, she's very excited about the fact of the book, and she gets excited when it gets a good review and angry when it gets a bad review. I think she enjoys the fact of the book, but she does not want to discuss the content of the book. I think that's wise. You know, she sees this very much as my version of events. She's kind of dissociated from it, I think, in a healthy way.
It may be your portrait of your mother, but that's not necessarily the way she sees herself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And in the case of the memoir I wrote about my father, that's just my version of my childhood. My brothers had very different experiences.
Well, this is quite fascinating. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.